Welcome to iPad Pros, the show all about using your iPad to be productive and get work done. I'm Tim Chen, host of the show.
I do use the set list feature almost exclusively for when I'm on a gig because I've got thousands of PDFs in there. So it's nice to be able to just go to like, here's the Easter gig 2024 and then have my like five or six scores I need.
Welcome to another episode of iPad Pros. On this episode, we are joined once again by Robbie Burns. Robbie is a music educator, freelance percussionist, and technology specialist. He also hosts the Music Ed Tech Talk podcast. This is his fourth time on this podcast. You can also listen to episode 121 for our deep dive into Dorico and Sibelius on the iPad, episode 130 for our discussion on using the iPad as a music educator, and episode 178 for our episode all about Logic Pro for the iPad. In this episode, we are going to focus on using the iPad on gigs and all of the roles and ways the iPad is great for a performing musician. If you'd like to support this podcast and get early access to both this podcast and Vision Pros, you can do so by subscribing to either Apple Podcasts or supporting the Patreon at patreon.com/iPadPros. My great thanks to everyone that supports the show. Even $1 a month on Patreon goes a long way and is very much appreciated. With that, here's my interview with Robbie. Enjoy. Welcome back to the podcast, Robbie.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about this topic. And of course, I could talk to you about any and everything iPad and Apple for all hours of the day.
Yes, we will try to contain ourselves to like about an hour today. We'll see how well we do. So I'm excited. You, as our listeners should know, this is your fourth time on. And you're a musician, a percussionist, a music teacher. And in today's episode, we're going to focus on gigging and kind of performance apps and uses of the iPad in that environment versus what we've covered in the past. So,
yeah, I'm excited too, because like I use the iPad every time I perform and every time anytime I'm performing on percussion or conducting, I usually have it with me on the gig and it's a big part of it. But it's also, it's just like kind of an obvious extension of how I'm using my devices, but it's not something that I get to like pause and actually like think through my workflow. And so it was kind of fun yesterday to sit down and think like, okay, like this is maybe not all obvious to every person who's ever held an iPad before.
Right. As you said, conducting, my mind flashed back to some of my conductors growing up in college and before, and when they really get into it, the dramatic thing of turning the page in this big bombastic way, and they got sweat flying off their face, and I could see like if it's an iPad, like the sweat landing on the screen and not be able to turn the page properly or something weird.
My favorite moment, or it happened early in my teaching career, because I've used an iPad to conduct since like 2011.
Yeah.
And it was not that many years of tapping the right side of the screen to turn the page before I was like using a paper score one day.
Yeah.
And I just found myself, the muscle memory, I just found myself reaching my finger to the right side of the paper and caught myself before I made it all the way there thinking like, wait, that's not right.
I love it. Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. Have you had any iPads go flying off stands in your history?
I have had, let's see, it's like 6 years ago where the other band director who teaches at the middle school where I teach, like her, one of her percussionists was sick the night of the concert. So I needed to go up there and like cover a crash cymbal part, but the whole pacing of the I was just not that familiar with their gear setup or anything. So I'm like kind of scrambling to get the iPad to have the correct part on it. And then I'm putting it on the stand and trying to like wrangle the crash cymbals. And then my iPad is, I guess, too heavy. So some of these stands don't, if they don't get maintained or like the screws don't get tightened regularly, they flop. So like all of the, I get to a point like these are, you know, it was not like a brand new iPad, but I'm not that precious, but I just watched as all seven of the other percussionists' faces went into shock as my iPad just like fell straight off the music stand on the floor. And then she kept conducting. So I like missed the first crash cymbal hit and they all were startled for like the first couple measures. And then they saw me just carry on. And then they were like, oh, okay, the show must go on.
Yes. Oh, wow. I was just thinking about the Vision Pro and using Fourscore with that device. That would just look weird on a performance stage because it would be very cool. You could have the sheet music right next to the conductor and have the same. You wouldn't have to glance up at the conductor anymore. You're just like, they'd be right there.
I think that's I'm glad you're thinking that way because, like, I think, you know, we could go down a vision hole and, you know, a rabbit hole if we wanted to. But I think like the hardware is not ubiquitous enough, nor is it exactly tweaked to be something that someone would just like use for this purpose regularly.
No,
like an iPad.
And some instruments like flute, I think, would be problematic with just like you got the flute hitting the headset, probably.
But that's an obvious way that it solves a problem, though, and I don't think people think about it that way. Some people just write it off entirely. But yeah, being able to put the music large right next to the conductor is awesome. I'll tell you one thing too, mm-hmm. as a percussionist, we're often managing really irregular setups that change drastically depending on the gig. So like one of my things when I was gigging a lot more often than I am now, I would do a lot of musical theater where I would have maybe like three or four different music stands. And, you know, I mean, I haven't like really used my, this is like before I was a big heavy iPad user. So like, I would just like be making photocopies and having just the pages I needed on the stands I needed them, so that if I had to like turn around and run to the xylophone for two measures, that I, you know, I would just only have the pages I needed near that xylophone, and it would all be, I would have a whole logistic setup of like when I do the page turns on which stands. But you know, with Vision Pro, like nope, not a lot of people are going to buy two iPads or three iPads, but with unlimited windows just around you, you could totally just like make a bunch of different windows and have all that stuff be digital.
Yeah, definitely.
And never have to even bring it, you know, an iPad anywhere. So there's a lot of ways that this can actually solve problems. People are, of course, reluctant to new technology.
Yes.
And, you know, but I think we can already see some cases of it. I think Fourscore being on Vision Pro is awesome. I'll tell you what, too. Composer John Mackey posted a Facebook post of him. He uses Sibelius on the Mac, I believe, to mm-hmm. compose. But he posted an image because he has a Vision Pro. And, like, he had taken his Mac's screen and just, like, put it on where your sheet music would sit on your piano. He had just like blown up the screen of his Mac so that it, like the width of it was the same width of his piano. So he just saw like a full giant 3-page score right on his piano where he could like poke out notes and see what he liked. And then he could, of course, you know, manipulate with his eyes mm-hmm. the notes that were on the screen. Very, very cool stuff.
Yeah. Related to that, I guess Bezel updated their app. This is an app that lets you put your they updated it so it supports iPad now. You can put your iPad screen inside the Vision Pro. And I naturally opened up Bezel and tried this out where I put the virtual iPad screen in front of my real iPad screen and made it like a 27-inch iPad attached to my Magic Keyboard for iPad. And that was just a fun, just wild thing. Because unlike the Mac, it actually, with Bezel, shows like the frame of the iPad. So it kind of looks like the iPad's in front of you still. Which is just a fun, just like, what you can kind of imagine what bigger iPads would be like, you know, with that. And I'm curious for you as a musician that needs to kind of look at a distance sometimes. Is the 12.9-inch iPad your favorite iPad? And if they made a 15-inch iPad, would you opt for that? Like, bigger is better for kind of what you're using it for?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think when it comes to, like, professional music performance and gigging, the size is maybe, like, the most important aspect of choosing an iPad. And I talk to lots of other teachers and musicians who eventually do, if they choose to go the route of using digital scores, this is the reason why almost every musician I know and every teacher I know has a 12.9-inch iPad Pro. Like, the size is the major determining factor. And I know for me, I've wrestled with it a lot. Like, I really far prefer the 11-inch size.
Yeah.
The day that I bought my first iPad Pro, I think 2016 it was, or 15, whenever the first model came out. That was the day that it stopped really being an iPad for me. It started being a computer. So we have in our house, we have kind of like a family iPad mini that's got like some Kindle and some like blog, you know, like I use an RSS reader called Reader. And I just, you know, I do reading on that and I use it kind of like an iPad. I do occasionally like stream some games and movies to the iPad Pro, and I use it often like a laptop if I want to. But it is really like, I think at this point, I just have to have the 12.9-inch size. I don't know if I could really go bigger. I like it. I can also, because I can carry it around, I can rip it off of the Magic Keyboard and then like kind of carry it in my arm, and cradle it in my arm and take it around the class. I can like grade if I'm grading piano performance tests. And it's a pretty good size for sheet music. I've never felt like it's too small. I have pretty good eyesight. And you can, of course, you can flip it in landscape and then see two pages pretty easily on the screen.
Yeah, conducting would be the one area where you're trying to see a You probably aren't doing full orchestras, but if you were doing full orchestras, that would demand much larger size classes.
The thing is, yeah, I can kind of see it. So there's a couple things worth saying. So, I mean, I have enough experience conducting with it that I feel like I can speak on this, but I will also note, like, most of my conducting is middle school band, and the level of music that we play by the time of the concert is often pretty much memorized. Like, not in every note, but yeah. Like, I can make all the cues I need to and show all the things I want to show.
You know
what's
going on. Yeah. Because you do a lot of practicing in middle school. Like,
that's, we do. We repeat this repertoire quite a lot before the concert. So, like, I had a moment actually last month where we did a live performance, and I think this is later. I put it in the outline, but I'll just tell it now. So we're at, you know, the band festival, which is like this assessed event. There's judges, and we're performing alongside all the other schools in our district. And I'm there ready to conduct from my iPad. And the first trumpet player comes up to me and he says, and I'm like, what's up, dude? And he's like, I did not pack my music folder into the bin. And I'm like, oh, dude, why now? Why 5 minutes before we go on stage? So I pulled up my iPad, and fortunately, like, our whole, we have like a lot of our sheet music organized in a shared Google Drive amongst the music teachers on our team, just for ease of handling. And it's cases like this where I was able to, there was actually like another band director on the trip kind of helping out with us, who is teaches at one of the high schools we feed into. So I just handed him my iPad and I said, can you please fix this? And he's like, sure. And in a matter of moments, he had, like, you know, pulled it all up on the iPad. So that kid played from my iPad. I conducted from memory, and the rest is history. One of the benefits, though, of I will always buy for my primary iPad an LTE model for this reason. Like, you just never know when you're going to need to do some, like go hunt down, like, even just like a few. I had a bunch of Easter gigs last weekend, and like, I was on a gig and I had like pulled, I had misinterpreted like which one of the parts the conductor of the thing wanted me to read from. And so, like, I was just able, she was like, oh, no, it's this one. And I was able to go to her email and then just like drag it into Foursquare right there on the fly. Like, that would just be lots of cumbersome extra steps if I did not have an internet connection everywhere I was.
Now, did this experience encourage you to look into portable printers to bring along, so you just print out parts from your iPad?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll tell you another really brief story of like, you always like learn things through failure.
Yes.
Like, and sometimes the biggest learning experiences are like the biggest fails and the most embarrassing fails. So speaking of, we like keep all of our original copies of music in these folders, because like, we have the students put the folders the day of the concert in this bin, and then we carry these really giant heavy bins of folders so that when we get to the concert site, we open it and every student comes in and grabs their folder number. They have all their music. Well, the orchestra director at my school and I used to co-direct a symphony orchestra, which was like an extracurricular thing before the school day. And we were performing at our trip. We perform at Hershey Park, which is like this theme park.
Sure.
In our area. And we do this at the end of every school year, and we're there, and the symphony orchestra is like the first group to perform in the morning. And we were there, it's like 8 a.m. It's not even 8 a.m. yet. And we're at this remote high school 2 hours away, and we're getting off the buses, and we're getting, all the students have their instruments and everybody has everything. And he says, okay, he looks at me and he says, all right, where are the folders? And I look at him and I said, I thought you had the folders. And he's like, well, I thought you had the folders. So we realize we've left all of our music to this like 90 piece orchestra.
Oh, you don't have 90 iPads, school. I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, we didn't. So, and of course, the band director who's hosting this thing is like doing this every weekend of the spring, and is like completely has been here before. So like, we didn't expect anything, but he was like, let me see if I can open up the photocopy room. So, and we have some, we were able to like salvage, some parts, but we couldn't like kind of gather up everything. So it's just funny because I always tell the story, because we are like, okay, so like the stuff we were planning to play, we had a lot of repertoire prepared, but like the things we were planning to play, which were like, sometimes at these events you prepare music that is, sometimes there's like standards for like what kinds of pieces of music are like appropriate. Like, do they show like a certain range of musical and expressive ideas. Like, you want to try to show as much range as you can because you're trying to give the judges at these things a lot of
right. You want areas, something, you know, slow and emotional. You want some fast technical stuff. Maybe right. some a march so, or something. Yeah.
So we ended up playing changing something that was going to be on the program to our warm up, which is usually not judged or adjudicated at these things. And so we did that, and they played it from memory because we're like, yeah, if anything goes wrong, that won't hurt us if we mess it up. But that left one of our pieces, we couldn't salvage any of the, like, any trace of these parts. So we're like, well, we've been working on an arrangement of Pinball Wizard by. So we go to the judges before we walk on stage. It's like 8 a.m. and we're like, so we can play the music we wrote on the sheet and told you in advance we were going to perform today, or we can sound good. What would you prefer? And all the judges were like, just do whatever you need to do to sound good. So we performed adjudicated on stage, the Pinball Wizard that year.
Love it.
And then the orchestra, these things I downplay and do not necessarily appreciate the competitive aspect of these things. But I just think it's funny that we like they won this like best orchestra and overall award for the whole day at the park for playing Pinball Wizard, which is just hilarious. So. And following a humongous failure on our part to bring all of our music with us.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So May 6th is the day we are now hearing for the next generation of iPad Pros and iPad Airs, about a month out or so. And you're rocking the 2018 iPad Pro 12.9. Anything that Apple could do to inspire an upgrade? Like... For the uses that you have of your iPad, you know, as we'll talk about a little bit, the Mac is at your desk and the iPad is your kind of mobile computer. So it doesn't even matter if the iPad works on external monitors. That's not for you kind of thing. Like what could they do to...
Let me say two things in favor of having an iPad Pro and then basically like just question everything.
Sure.
So I'll get the big stuff out of the way. So I think... I've had a lot of great experiences with the iPad Pro. I do like if there are like little features, especially if they influence the software. I always like to have what the best thing is that Apple is.
Yeah, like the Apple Pencil might be like.
Right. Like I know there's already software features from the Apple Pencil that I'm missing out on.
Yes.
Chip. So and then, of course, there's like other possible accessory stories, too. I really like my Magic Keyboard. I like my Apple Pencil. But you know, I think the other thing is that like having the nicest end thing does like, this has been the longest time I've ever gone without replacing an iPad by far. Sure. I've had this for almost 6 years. I used to replace them like every year or two. And
yeah,
the battery is not good, and it's a little, you know, it's a little laggy, but like, and there are times where I take it out and I use it like a laptop and I appreciate everything it's capable of, but I really use this iPad Pro. I depend on it for this exact context, like the sheet music and then the classroom performance kind of stuff. So I think where I'm landing is like there are times where my iPad Pro during the summer months is just like sitting on my desk and not getting that much use, which is so funny because the iPad is positioned as this kind of like as a fun content consumption device, yes. I think, by most of our culture. But for me, it's actually like the most... I don't like get the most of my like email and like document creation and like logistics done on it, but like it is a work machine in that I use it for music so much. So I think that if Apple were to release, because I'm hearing there might be like a non-pro, maybe like an Air model that's 12.9,
right?
That would be something that, first of all, I'm like, you know, maybe an edge case. I know that like almost every musician and teacher that I've ever met, if they need an iPad upgrade, they would absolutely get a 12.9 inch Air over a Pro. Like the Pro would offer them completely nothing that they would need.
Yeah, like OLED and ProMotion and...
Yeah, it's a glorified PDF reader when you're reading sheet music on it. And I love it for that, but it's very, very flexible at doing that job. So that would be the first thing I would need to consider is like, I don't even know if I would... go Pro the next go around, but I'm actually even like not sure if I'm gonna get anything at this point. Like
is the 2018 model, is it still fast enough? Like it's not lagging quite yet, or
it's a little annoying to have to think and manage the battery of it. Like I have to really But it just requires a little bit of extra planning.
Yeah, is it worth it just to pay for the battery upgrade? $99 I think it is to swap out the battery.
Yeah, I mean, there is that. It's just in really great shape. So I think things what Apple would have to do, and I don't know which models they would or would not do this to, but there would need to be, in addition to the increase in specs, the screen would be, a nice screen would be nice, but I think it would need to be something with the accessories and or something that the chip unlocks in the software or that the accessories unlock in the software. So if they could make like a new generation Apple Pencil and keyboard that appealed to me much more than my current ones. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's hard for me to imagine how they could improve upon the Apple Pencil dramatically. But I can tell you what, like there's a lot of things I would really love to have from the Magic Keyboard. You know, I really actually prefer the Smart Fold. What do they call this? The keyboard, the other version of the keyboard.
Yeah, I never heard that one. I think the Folio. Yeah.
If they could make that style of keyboard, but with a trackpad, I would instantly buy it. It's so much lighter. I love that the keys are like fully enclosed in this kind of like canvasy material, like water can't get in them.
Interesting. Cause I love the backlight and all that. Yeah.
I do love that stuff, but, and I do like that you can kind of rip it off, but also the Folio keyboard can just kind of fold mm-hmm. on the back of it. So they could fit that, make something with a lighter footprint that had that same kind of design sensibility, but that did have the trackpad support.
What I've heard is they're kind of going the opposite and making it aluminum.
Right. Yeah. So more, but see, here's the thing is like, I know we've talked about this before and we're different on this. I am absolutely at this point, and I am confident that they're not going to do it anytime in the near future, if ever, but I'm still absolutely on throw Mac OS on the thing team.
I want iPad OS, but I'd love the ability to run some Mac apps on iPad OS.
I just think like when the thing is attached to my Magic Keyboard, it doesn't look anything different than my MacBook. Like it's almost the same hardware. And under the hood, there's so much in common between the two operating systems and the platforms at this point that it's you know, to me, my dream future computer would be something to the effect of like a thing that
you want the MacPad like Fattici made where it's both or something.
Yeah, but that thing is like, you know, I mean, that's that thing is born of like, you know, someone who loves to tweak.
And... Yeah, you want a official one that like it's a Mac when it's docked and to the keyboard.
Yeah, I don't want to have to like be maintaining it in that way.
Yes.
So
you want an elegant version of that. Yeah,
basically. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I would love to see in the distant future or in the not too distant future, some sort of like iOS device that's mobile, but then has like a different context when it's docked or plugged into a keyboard.
The one hardware tweak I would love with iPad in the future is not OLED, but I want the same screen technology that they did with the 15 Pro and Pro Max to enable you to use the phone outside at crazy brightness for extended periods of time. And that would enable the iPad to be used alongside a pool or, you know, outside performances for musicians. Because that technology is amazing, the phone. Like, they fixed it. You can use your phone outside in bright sunlight for a long time and it doesn't get dim. Like, they fixed that. So bring that to iPad.
So but based on the rumors I'm reading, and you can tell me if there's anything you've read that maybe is, I think I'm mostly up to date on everything. It does not seem like there's anything they could possibly announce that would make me think, oh, I've got to have that. Like I might just because like I do at some point need to.
Yeah. Like it's 6 years old, you know, what's your upgrade cycle for iPad? Is it every 6 years? Sure.
I mean, I would be happy if it was 6 years, but also at this point I'm thinking like, I don't know. Do I really even need to upgrade? I'm going to have to just kind of wait it out and see.
Yeah, you could wait for the one after this to like the revised version of this design, you know.
Yeah, but I think for me it would have to be something really different with the accessories or with the with the software.
Yeah. So let's move on to software. So when you're gigging and performing, is it safe to say Fourscore is the main app that you use to do all this?
Yeah, I mean Fourscore and email might as well be the operating system of the iPad when I'm on a gig. So Fourscore I use on all of my devices. I do a lot of
there's a Mac version as well, right? So you could like load up stuff there and it syncs across.
Absolutely. Okay. One of the very like few Catalyst apps for the Mac where I'm just like living inside of it on the Mac too, and it's usually file management or reference. on the Mac. Obviously, I don't conduct from my Mac, but it's great to get an email from someone. Here's the scores for the gig this weekend. Drag and drop those into Fourscore. And then I have PDFs inside of Fourscore. There are a lot of times where all I'm really doing in Fourscore is turning the pages and highlighting in a red colored, you know, digital pencil things that I need to write into the score. Mm-hmm. I do use the set list feature almost exclusively for when I'm on a gig because I've got thousands of PDFs in there. So it's nice to be able to just go to like, here's the Easter gig 2024.
Yeah.
And then have my like five or six scores I need.
And do you have a Bluetooth pedal that helps you not have to touch the screen as much?
Yeah, I do have one, and I will. I'll send you the link to the one I have if you want to include it in the notes.
Yeah,
it's that'd be
great.
It's made by AirTurn. I still recommend AirTurn. I know there's a couple of competitors people like. I used to have a AirTurn receiver. This was like maybe 8 years ago, and then you could like plug it into your own pedal. And I actually had these two Boss guitar pedals that were pretty industrial. And I like them because, you know, sometimes I'm playing a drum set and I like the idea of I'm using my feet for drum set. If I want to like mm-hmm. move my left hi-hat pedal foot onto the ground, I can kind of smash they can take a beating if I'm like getting yes. into the zone and I need to like turn the page by just like kind of stomping my foot real fast. But then I lost that receiver and then I went for AirTurn makes like a whole package deal. That's like a receiver plus a page turn right and a page turn left. Mm-hmm. pedal. And I like what they make because they design these pedals so that they're pretty quiet. So you can't hear them when you turn the page.
Gotcha.
And that's where I've situated myself. A lot of my gigging when I'm performing is usually timpani. Mm-hmm. So I will just kind of position the two page turn pedals in between the two pedals of the two drums
okay.
that I might have on the gig.
Because there's two pedals, one to go back, one to go forwards. Is that right?
Yeah. And you can actually, I haven't really done this yet, which will surprise you because I'm kind of an automation nerd, but you can, there's a whole lot of interesting stuff you can do in shortcuts with Bluetooth attached devices. And there are buttons on the thing that are not the pedals, the page turners. So there's like probably some stuff I could, you know, I could probably like program a button or like a long press on a pedal to like open up a certain set list or mm-hmm. show or like open up my email alongside my Fourscore or something.
Yeah, it's probably best not to get too complicated with that because then you'll have email thrown up when you're trying to perform.
Yeah, I mean, I try to not mess with it. Well, and you know what's funny is like what really annoys me is all hardware still ships with like bright blue lights on it, and I'm like, come on, what do you think this is? Like even the AirTurn, I'm like, I am you're sometimes performing in a very dark environment and the default for the thing to do to let you know that it's on is it like blinks I think green or blue every I don't know 30 seconds.
You put tape over it yet?
No, and there's actually a brand which I also forgot. So on my podcast I recently had I do like a holiday gift guide once per season, and I David McDonald was on my show and I'll send you the link, but he recommended to me it's a brand of these like little sticky things that are designed mm-hmm. for this exact purpose of dimming or blocking out the little lights on things.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, so annoying. Hotel rooms.
Right.
So the Mac you use to kind of organize your sheet music and kind of set up the set lists and all that?
Yeah, it's just a little bit. Like, that's usually where my email is. It's a little easier to navigate, get around. And then, you know, I can just do some dragging and some dropping from straight from the email or from the Finder into Fourscore.
And is there with studying and practicing your music, I'd imagine you use the back page turn quite a bit. Like, are there certain modes in Fourscore if you're struggling with a certain part of a tune?
Yeah, it's interesting because so it depends on how I orient the iPad. If it's in landscape, I can see two pages. Sometimes I actually just go in portrait and I see one big page. And the downside for conducting and performing is you're turning pages way more often.
Right.
However, the pedal unleashes some potential that you otherwise don't have. So like I can be in the middle of a timpani roll that goes from the bottom of one page to the next, and I can like turn the page while I'm using two hands, which is
yeah.
a clear advantage over paper.
Yes. Yeah. I have definitely wiped out my own music stands and paper flying everywhere trying to like get to the pages. I'm frantically going from one to the next, and yeah, it's a thing. What are some of the other apps kind of that you use on the iPad in this context of performing and getting ready for performances?
Yeah, I'd say like another one I use a lot when I'm when the gig is jazz related is iReal Pro, which has a bunch of chord charts saved in it. And so, like, I'm not at the level of knowledge of the jazz standards that, like, I can on the fly transpose a common key song to a different key. The iReal Pro app can do it. So if I have, like, a chord chart for the song Autumn Leaves, mm-hmm. and the band wants to do it a half step higher, I can just change the key in the app, and then I can see the chords in the key that I would improvise over.
Okay, yeah.
And when I practice for when I practice my jazz standards, that's, you know, the iReal Pro is just basically like it's for storing jazz standards like chord charts, but then it actually can like play a MIDI playback of a drummer, a harmonic, and a bass player instrument, and you can like change the tempo, change the style, change the key. It's designed for practicing your scales.
Yeah,
because
it's more than just a PDF viewer.
It's not even PDFs. It has its own.
Right.
File extension.
Yeah, because Foursquare, you're dealing with PDFs, which is great because it's universal, but it doesn't have the ability to change the PDFs because they're PDFs. Yeah.
Right. And for copyright reasons, you can't see like the melodies of the songs in iReal, just the chords. So I usually have it open in split view, like with Foursquare on one side and iReal on the other. And then Foursquare, actually, I have one of my most successful YouTube videos, which is ancient at this point, but you can index a really, really big PDF file like the Real Book so that all of the individual pages, like if there's a song per page, they're all indexable and searchable in Foursquare. So you just basically like drag a CSV file that mm-hmm. links in one column the song titles to the page numbers of the PDF in the other column. And so I've got a bunch of those for like songbook kind of style things, or like really, really big method books. And you can, of course, really easily bookmark pages of a PDF right within Foursquare. You don't need to do the CSV file thing. So that's a really helpful workflow for both practice, but also sometimes I use that on the gig.
Yeah, I was wondering, it sounds like most of the jazz charts are just one page, but I was wondering if you could use the pedal to turn stuff in both Real Pro and Foursquare at the same exact time.
Yeah, iReal Pro's, the chord chart usually fits on a single page. I don't know if I've ever played anything that doesn't.
Gotcha, yeah. Okay.
So that's a useful one. I use my Tonal Energy Tuner app is like my, you know, that's like, and actually I'm
timpani,
pleased to
say. Timpani is what you need for tuning, right?
Yeah, I usually like use the drones on that app when I get to the gig. Because mm-hmm. if I've moved them, they've been like in my car, like there's like different temperature yeah. and they've like, I just set the tuning gauges to make sure that they're good at the beginning of each rehearsal and each gig. So that's a nice app to use. Anytime I need to take notes, I use that. I love that feature where you like drag the Apple Pencil from the lower right corner of the iPad screen. You get a little mini like Apple Note window.
Yeah.
That's a pretty frequent thing that I use also on the gig.
I love you saying that, 'cause I have not even remembered that was a feature. Been
actually,
so many years. Yeah.
Yeah. After for the past 2 or 3 years getting really into PKM stuff, I've actually moved my like primary note taking workflow back to Apple Notes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm still using Obsidian and Craft for things that I think they're uniquely good at. But my most general note taking is happening in Apple Notes.
Okay. Yeah, that's really cool. And you have different folders and subfolders to kind of organize?
Yeah, I have different folders only really if I share. Like, I have a lot of shared folders.
Okay.
So I've got a folder that I share with my music team, one that I share with my family, one that I share with, I've got a student teacher I'm working with right now. And so we've got a shared note for sharing ideas and lesson plans and stuff. So it's really good because, like, those are really, really useful features of Apple Notes. And it's nice to have more of my general workflows in there. Because, like, if you use that feature where you, like, drag the pencil from the lower right, that quick note is most likely kind of just getting lost in the abyss. Unless Apple Notes is your main note-taking app, then you're constantly like forced to see all those scrappy quick notes that you took.
Right. Yeah. I wonder how many people using Apple Notes today never got to experience the days of IMAP, Apple Notes, and like the early days. Like, it's so long. Yeah.
I know. So Apple Notes has come so far. It really has. And that's one of the reasons it's viable. I was just the kind of stuff I was 99% of the time doing in a more advanced note taking app is the kind of stuff that Apple Notes is actually pretty good at, which is like mixing media, being fast and quick to get ideas into. So I really appreciate it. I like it a lot and it's good. When I do need to, I did use Craft recently though, to be the, I was like the equipment manager for a pretty big Christmas concert that happened earlier this year. And I needed to basically communicate to the section, like, who was playing which parts on which pieces. There was, like, probably 20 plus pieces on the program. And so that was interesting because that was kind of fun to, like, go sit on my Mac and kind of, like, organize all the PDFs into Fourscore. Oh, I should mention scanning software, because, like, not everything I got was some of, I got, like, a full, like, mailed in the mail.
Yeah.
A bunch of paper.
And
for some of the
parts. Sheet music scanning, are there different considerations from other documents?
So there's two kinds of ways you can think of sheet music scanning. Since Fourscore is a glorified PDF reading, for me, the most of my scanning is, like, I need a scanner app that's going to take the paper picture on my desk and, like, trim the edges off and turn it into a grayscale PDF. And for that, Scanner Pro, I really liked, but now Greg Pierce, the maker of Drafts, has an app, and I need to look it up on my phone to tell you what it is.
Quick Scan? What's it called?
I have it on my home screen. I just don't remember. Yeah, Simple Scan.
Simple Scan. That's it.
And it is just, like, the most bare bones. It uses actually the Apple document scanner. Mm-hmm. But what you do is, just like Drafts is for notes, the idea is that it can take the scan really fast, and then you can kind of pre-program these advanced workflows for, like, where they go. So, like, I almost always want to scan a document on my phone and just have it go straight to the desktop of my Mac. Period. Like, no fuss.
Oh, interesting.
And so I can,
for a second there, I thought you said you'd have, like, Fourscore on the iPhone that would then sync over.
I don't think you can set up an app
as a destination.
You can have it go straight to the share sheet, like, pull up the share sheet, and then you can tap Fourscore.
Okay.
But what I have it set up to do is, it just, when I open the app, it just, like, immediately can hold my phone over a piece of paper. And then when I'm done scanning, it'll save it straight to my desktop folder, which, of course, since the Files app on, I have, like, documents and desktop syncing turned on all my Apple devices. So then that's great, because then I can go to my Mac and then I can see that PDF there, organize it amongst, because for this gig, some of them were digital. So I got some digital stuff. I got some paper stuff. So I've got it all wrangled all to digital now. I have, like, one set list in Fourscore that's everything. And then I've got one set list that's just me, like, just the pages of music I need to see. And then in the Craft app, because Craft is really good at making your notes shareable to the web, I made a note that had, like, a table of all the assignments per piece, the order of the program, a copy of the program, and then, like, YouTube videos with, like, reference audio for people to go listen to if that was helpful to them. And then, like, an equipment to-do list, like, with checkable to-dos, like, with assignments, like, who is bringing which equipment to the gig.
For digital music, is DRM an issue in that world, or have they given up? And when you buy a digital sheet music, is it just a standard PDF that they don't care about?
You need to have a copyright expert on to talk about this. I actually was thinking about this when I was talking to you earlier about, like, the classroom. There's a lot of gray area. I think where the industry is moving is, a lot of people are assuming the attitude. Well, first of all, there's a lot of people moving to self-publishing. And especially in, like, in my band role.
Because there's websites that will sell you digital sheet music, right?
Right. So, like, an example of this is JW Pepper is a distributor of music. And I buy a lot of my concert band literature there. And they have this thing called ePrint. But they're, like, it's one of these things where they're living, like, with one foot in old school way. They don't understand that the value of digital is that it's, first of all, like almost infinitely scalable for cheap or free.
Yeah.
And they don't understand that, like, the benefit of it is the convenience overall. So
they,
like,
try to lock it down in the certain apps and,
yeah, they make you, it opens up this weird thing in your web browser where you, like, can print just the number of copies that you paid for. But the reality,
can't you just,
and then you tell it,
you can print the PDF,
it,
right?
If it printed successfully or not. And if you tell it didn't print successfully, then it doesn't count that against you. So it's like, what do you really think people are doing?
And on the Mac, can you do the print the PDF thing in the print dialog?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what I
you
thought.
You can do that. Yep. So like, anytime you have the system PDF printer, I've seen some websites try to circumvent that. But the bottom line is, like, this brings us all the way back to, like, the Napster, you know, like, at a certain point, like, can we agree that iTunes was as successful at selling music as it was because it was easy to buy it? Like, people want to pay unless you're, and listen, we've all been, many of us have experienced being a broke college student before, but I feel like whenever I see piracy cited as a reason why someone is making their software difficult to use or a digital good difficult to use, I think to myself, and I could be wrong, but I don't know any working professionals in my field who want to pirate anything. I just know that they just want their job to be easier.
Yes.
Like pirating is for 21-year-olds who are trying to like get Final Cut Pro on their computer and not spend $800. And I don't know. I just think like there's the music publishing, the whole industry, and it's slowly changing.
And that's wild music. Example, because like their end result, let me print this. You buy digital sheet music because you don't want cheap music. You want a digital thing.
Well, and I am, I mean, the fact is I am going to print that out. Like my students are going to read printed copies
sure,
of music.
Sure.
But like the whole reason I would want to order something electronically rather than like is wait in the mail. So the waiting is problematic, right? Like, and it is easier to get a packet of paper because like that's easier to pass out. It's easier to get
high quality
right away.
Paper. You don't have to worry about
it's
your printer
really
acting
nice.
Up.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's easier. But like the thing about getting it digitally is sometimes I will order something digital. One, because I want to have the archival, you know, reference of it on my computer. But two, I want it to be immediate and easy. And it is not immediate and easy if I have to like jump through hoops. But what a lot of publishers are doing now is they're self-publishing, and then they're just like giving you a download link. And a lot of people's policies are, I think, becoming more sensible. Like a couple of composers I know will state basically like, okay, you can't share this with anyone, but if you own a digital copy, my belief, speaking as the composer, is that one of like your band ensemble, everybody who's in your band should be able to perform my piece live by you buying this. Mm-hmm. So if you have like one more flute player than the number of flute parts you've bought.
Yes.
Give them a part. Like your band should be able to play my music. You can put these online as long as only students have access to practicing them.
Sure.
That's a lot of thing. That's another thing too. Like, right. So like, I think that's people who are basically saying like, I don't want you to buy this and then share this with every other band director in the world so that nobody buys it. Every band program should have a copy of it. However, do with it what is best for your students, as so long as it doesn't leave their use. That's kind of, to me, that's much more sensitive to the reality of how people use computers, but that's not how everybody uses it. And so I have always caution and tell people to know their copyright law before they go, you know.
Yeah. And it's not that much different from back in the old days. Photocopiers were abused to all heaven with bands where people copying parts and stuff. And, you know,
right.
if you're a good band director, you're not just going to steal and photocopy someone else's set of the music. You know, you'll get your own set to copy from.
I guess there are people who do it, though. And like for them, like I say, like, you know, don't do that. Like, I don't know why. What I mean, I don't know. I don't have data to say how many people are like just straight up like downloading our.
Yeah,
website.
The only scenario I could really imagine that you mentioned the poor college student. The poor school budget that has, you know, $500 in the budget for the entire years of whatever, you know, some really cheap budget for the school band or whatever, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's just me. I'm willing to pay for digital goods. So I don't know, maybe. Anyway, there's a lot to cover there. But I think the reality is like I tend to take the view that like if I own. This is, we're entering into Burns morality land here. Like if I own the music, I think like I should be able to like do with it what I need to do to like be able to best practice and perform that music. So like, you know, so if I have a piece of paper that I bought, like whether or not I'm reading that on my iPad, now things get a little hairy. It's like, okay, what if like someone's using your paper copy and you're using your iPad? Like when we perform with the band, I'm reading on an iPad, so we're supposed to own a certain number of scores. We buy extra scores for each of the judges.
Mm-hmm.
So like there is a number of parts that have been purchased.
That's part of that score.
Relative to the number of people who are simultaneously using the part or the score.
Yeah. Right. In your notes here, Dorco and StaffPad are mentioned. How are you using these in kind of this environment?
I think for me on mobile, these score notation software applications are pretty much used for like we covered it a little bit actually when I was on to talk about like the classroom stuff, like making practice resources. Sometimes though I do have to recreate a part or construct a part or like rearrange or rewrite something.
Okay.
Like that needed to happen on that Christmas concert is like there were less players than there were parts. So there had to be like some redistribution of like who was covering what, and some measures of music had to be cut.
I see. Gotcha.
And I still think that I love Dorico. That's my primary score notation software on the Mac. StaffPad is pretty good at getting stuff in for quick stuff because it is Apple Pencil driven. And now it has this awesome feature where you can record an acoustic piano and it will notate in clean music notation, which you play.
And it does a better job than the MIDI performance capture things.
I love how their philosophy on note input is like, let's just like cut all the like technical stuff out. So like you run into some limitations. Like there's things that a keyboard and a mouse and a MIDI controller can do technically with accuracy that your other accessories can't. But like writing with the Apple Pencil right on the staff and then seeing that turns the notation is pretty impressive. And then likewise, playing an acoustic piano into the software with the record button on and then just seeing that become notation, like that is infinitely. It doesn't seem like it would be that different than a MIDI controller, but you're cutting out a whole entire interface necessary. Yeah. You're cutting out tweaking the settings, fussing around with like the inputs and the outputs. Like you're just much more directly like using the tool to get the notation in.
Yeah. My issue always with the MIDI performances has been if I'm like one tiny bit of a click past it, it'll capture that. So my whole note becomes a whole note plus the 30-second notes tied to it.
Yeah, some software is getting much better at this. I really like, actually, Dorico does an awesome job of making smart decisions about your intent, because their whole thing is like that the engraving of it has to look readable. Mm-hmm. So they'll make really good decisions. They also have really great keyboard shortcuts for fixing that if it does go in incorrectly. So like a whole note plus an eighth note, it's like shift option and then the left arrow key will like shorten the value of the note that's selected.
Oh, I see. Yeah. And then your calendar, is that something that you're relying on to, I guess, make sure you're going to the right place? And
yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, it's a real big part of the stress relief. So I threw it in here just to say like, being able to have the email open with all the dates and then like I use Fantastical on my Mac to enter, just to be able to type in like gig on January 13th at 7 p.m. and then start typing in the location. Cause I'm like judicious about putting locations in my calendar events. Cause I've got a new car over the summer and I have CarPlay again, once again,
very nice.
After 7 years of not having CarPlay, I finally have CarPlay again. And I love to just be able to, I get in the car and the thing, if my next event has the location in it, it just like I have to tap one button to start going there.
Yeah, I am also very diligent about location data in the events. If there's an airplane, a airport pickup, I will put the airport in there because it gives me the directions, and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's very useful.
If there's extra traffic, I'll know. And yeah,
sure. And you can put other useful links in the calendar event too. So like you can Craft and Fourscore accept backlinks. So you can copy, if you're looking at a score in Fourscore, you can clip a link straight to that content to your clipboard and like type it in the notes field of a calendar event. Same with a Craft note. So you can sort of create an interconnected network of stuff.
That's pretty cool. And then you mentioned in your kind of like Craft list, we already covered that it is used as your packing list and kind of documents for the gig. But to-dos and, what kind of tasks do you also kind of assign to different gigs to make sure you don't forget about?
So the new one, like I said, charging the iPad is something I need to make sure is on every gig.
Oh, yeah, because you would want a fully charged iPad so it doesn't die halfway through because you're probably using max screen brightness to see it properly and all that.
Right, exactly. So that, and then I have to, the equipment I need is somewhat different because of the nature of percussion being a family of instruments. So I tend to have to construct that somewhat manually. But yeah, I mean, I've moved from OmniFocus to Things over the past several months. Those are my two major software changes of the year is I'm doing Things and Notes instead of Obsidian and OmniFocus. And there's a couple of reasons why, but the main thing is like I'm doing so much on my phone. Like my 15 Pro Max is like, I think, the coolest computer ever. I love it so much. And I think that Things is a really sharply beautifully made mobile app, and the you know, it's always opens and syncs within seconds. I'm never just waiting for it to sync and then dragging and dropping, like reordering stuff. I do quite a lot throughout the day, and that's buttery smooth. So I'm missing some of my automation from OmniFocus, but I do appreciate that Things and Things has a really nice little sub list. So I might just have like a task that says pack and then a bunch of subtasks for the different instruments.
Nice. Yeah. And has Reminders ever tempted you with its improvements over the years?
The main issue I have with Reminders is that Things can have a due time, but not necessarily like a due date that isn't associated with the time. So like the idea that something can just be on my today list, but it isn't necessarily due at a specific time. That's something I really like about Things. But what I would love for Things is to be able to, occasionally I do need it. I really wish, and this is what OmniFocus is good at, I wish it could like say, it's not just due today, it's due at 3 p.m. today, and that matters. Yeah. So I think that's a distinction. So I end up using Reminders and Things, and Reminders is mostly for location and time specific stuff, stuff that I don't want to see until the actual minute I need to be thinking about it. And then it's like telling me now, you got to do this now. Whereas Things is more like the thing that's open persistently on my computer throughout the day, reminding me kind of like my running list of stuff I need to get through.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then shortcuts and focus modes. How are you utilizing this stuff when you're gigging and performing?
This was like the perfect awakening when I was kind of like first setting up focus modes and thinking about all the different ways I wanted my phones, my phone and my mobile stuff and my Mac to behave. Because I thought, you know, I am in a concert and there are specific things I need. So I need my stuff to absolutely not make any sound or be distracting in a live concert or performance. But when I'm doing band concerts, I actually really do sometimes need to be able to text with my team. Like if somebody needs something, they're in another room in the building and we've each got a group of 60 kids or like someone's telling me like, hit the, you know, from the back of the auditorium, hit the lights, we're starting, you know, I need that. So I've got a focus mode called concert, and that basically just mutes most notifications except from my music team. And then I run the focus mode. When I run it, a shortcut is automated, and that shortcut does several things on all of my devices to ensure that they do not make any noise. So all of my devices go to volume zero and they go into mute if they weren't already muted. And then my Apple Watch goes into theater mode. So it's like black unless I tap on the screen. Brightness is turned down slightly on all of my devices.
Even on the iPad?
No. Not on the iPad.
Okay.
I know I'm always going to adjust that. It's going to be variable to the environment that I'm in.
Gotcha.
And so that's a really nice little thing. I just turn that on anytime I'm in, like watching a concert, performing in a concert, conducting a concert. I always turn on that focus mode and then I don't have to think about my devices. And I have had no issues so far. I know some people say like you got to turn them all the way completely off, but that's not practical for someone who is like the professional in the room.
Yeah. Question for you. Has the overhead lights in different performance venues been a problem with glare? And like, have you looked into using kind of those matte screen protectors for that kind of scenario?
I used to really be into that stuff. My first couple of iPads had one of those. I actually don't have any issue reading with glare as long as the brightness is up. Once, maybe, or twice ever in my career, I have performed outside with an iPad, and it's been a little bit of an issue.
Okay. But indoors is not an issue because some of those lights can be pretty pretty
I know what
intense.
You mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wish I could give you something more here.
Okay.
But
that's
really
good.
It's not a super issue for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do like those, though. There's a rumor, isn't there, that the new iPad Pro might have some sort of an anti-glare screen?
I guess. I'm not sure I buy this rumor at all.
I don't think I buy it either.
Because that would diminish the beauty of the OLED, quite honestly.
Right, I know. Well, and that's ultimately why I stopped using these things, is anytime I would see someone else's iPhone and it didn't have that, because the thing is, like, the matte screen covers for iOS devices do feel really great under your thumb. Like, they're just so so smooth under your finger. And I do think they're visually appealing, but then anytime I would see the brightness and the contrast of the color on someone else's phone, I would be like, no, I want that. It's very attractive.
Screen protectors on phones drive me insane. It's like, just take care of your phone. I'm sorry, but it's like, don't throw it in your bag with your keys. Like, just like, take care of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
You won't have any issues, honestly, with your screen scratching.
Well, I'm the outlier. I mean, I don't put a case on my phone. Sometimes I have the Apple Wallet attachment stuck to it if I'm at work, because it has my entry key card in it. But
yeah, I'm the same. I live the sleeve lifestyle. So when I'm not using my phone, it lives in a sleeve, and then when I'm using it, it's without a case, and then I put it back in the sleeve when I'm not using. So. I really like that because, like, it's got a nice safe home. Both sides are protected when I'm not using it, and I can kind of put it anywhere. And if I can hand it to my kid as a toy, but you can't see the screen. So it's just a nice leather thing to feel in your hand kind of thing. Like, it's kind of the best of both worlds. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. I'll have to consider that. I'm doing okay. The most dangerous thing for my phone is when it slips out of my pocket through the cracks of the couch.
Yes. Yeah. My Vision Pro battery sadly slipped out of my pocket into the recliner. It's got some scratches from the metal and the recliner. It's very sad. But yeah. Thankfully, you don't really look at the battery when you're using it.
Right. That's true.
But yeah. Anyways, as far as accessories, any other accessories? And as far as the screen protector stuff, on the iPad, I did enjoy the paper like quite a bit. Like just using the Apple Pencil with it felt better. And yeah, outside was better too. But yeah, I do like the full color gamut of the unprotected screen and all that.
I totally agree.
But yeah, we already mentioned foot pedals over Bluetooth. And then... are you using any kind of special case with it? Like, I'd imagine, yeah, I'm trying to think, because you have the keyboard, of course. You probably still want to use that.
Right.
And you can't really
I put this area here at the end, but actually I think we kind of already covered it. I'm kind of like a Magic Keyboard focused guy. I occasionally put on the Smart Folio, which is a little bit better for gigging, because you can keep the case on and it sits flat on the music stand. But, I don't know. It's kind of nice, especially if I had a gig. Sometimes there's a little bit of waiting for a percussionist at a gig, and it is nice to be able to snap it onto that Magic Keyboard and type through, maybe get an email or two done during an extended waiting time. So I've been just keeping the Magic Keyboard attached to
it. And you don't have any special iPad music stand. I know those are a thing, right?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't, but okay. I used to do it when I used to have a church job where I was playing keyboard and guitar and running an Ableton Live rig, and I needed more flexibility with like where it was placed. I needed to be able to like reach up and touch it and just know that it was like rock solid, not going to go anywhere. And AirTurn, I think, was the brand I used. They make some stand attachments as well.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, because I can imagine that situation, having a Bluetooth keyboard and, you know, typing out your emails that way. Yeah. And then Apple Pencil, of course, we covered, and we'll see how that improves with Apple Pencil 3, presumably.
Did I read a squeezing rumor this past week?
Yeah, we're
going to
squeeze it, and maybe it'll work with the Vision Pro, they're saying, which I'm not sure how that will come to pass. The biggest question I have with Vision Pro is an Apple Pencil is how you would pair them. I guess it has some kind of near chip thing that can, I don't know, tap it or something.
I guess. Yeah. I think it seems like a continuity feature.
Yeah. Charging it over USB-C, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. Anyways, anything we didn't cover that you'd like to in the performing and gigging realm with iPad?
I think we covered everything.
Okay. Excellent. I just want to ask, I guess I want to ask as well, as far as being a percussionist and practicing, do you listen to like music as you're practicing with like the wind instruments? Is that a thing?
Sometimes, yeah. So actually in Fourscore, you can drag and drop an audio recording onto a score and it will associate that audio playback with the music.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so you like tap the middle of the screen and then a little like play pause button slides up from the bottom. So that's a really great thing. And there's a lot you can do with it. I mean, we talked about like 1/100th of the features of Fourscore. I think we covered some of my like education classroom uses last time. I mean, a Fourscore deep dive would be really cool. It would be cool to get Justin. Have you had ever?
I have had him on. Yeah. Great guy.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's an episode all about it if for those interested. That's really cool.
He's just like, he does everything you can possibly do.
Yeah. I remember back in middle school, wherever, I had the boom box and the tape, the audio cassette tape that came with the sheet music for you to when you're practicing. And,
right.
A little more advanced these days. Yeah.
I sometimes do just like the iPad is not always my device that's plugged into my best speakers. Sometimes that's my Mac.
Okay.
So I don't always use that feature unless I'm going to, it's more for like study and it's more for reference, not for playing along to.
I see.
So that can be a pretty useful thing. The other thing I'll say too is like, this is primarily more of a teaching benefit, but it kind of relates to practicing. I have a lot of my method books inside of Fourscore as well. So like a library of books, like books that are instructional and that have exercises that you can practice in them. And those are really cool too, because you can like, using the index feature, you can like have specific pages or particular exercises. Even if it's within a 200 page book, you can have that be text searchable and just jump straight to that page in that book.
That's awesome. Yeah. And yeah, I was gonna ask, I can probably print that as well if a student needs a copy of it, kind of thing. Cool. Where can people find your awesome podcast and whatever else you're up to online?
Yeah, musicedtechtalk.com is my blog and my podcast, and I'm publishing a podcast usually about once a month. A little slow writing this year so far, but yeah, I'm just, basically anything that is about teaching, pedagogy, about music, about stuff that I like that's happening in technology, and then all the various ways that those things kind of like meet up with each other. I'm writing about it and talking about it there. And for people who, I'm not super active on social media right now. I'm a lurker, mostly a lurker.
Yeah.
But people can certainly, if you want to subscribe to my mailing list, you can get all my blog posts and podcast episodes in your email.
Very cool. Well, thank you. I really appreciate your time today, learning about the gigging and performing world of using an iPad for that.
It's so fun to talk to you about it, as always, because you're an iPad nerd, but you also have a strong musical background. And so you ask really interesting and good questions. So it's fun. It's fun to go over it.
Well, that's my interview with Robbie. My thanks to Robbie for his time recording. And my thanks to you for your time and attention tuning in. As a reminder, you can support this podcast over at patreon.com/iPadPros or by subscribing in Apple Podcasts. With that, I'll talk to everyone again real soon.